The plan for today is two things. First, I'm going to introduce how to define types. And second, how to define packages in Julia. A package is something that can be loaded with using. Types is a bit more advanced than what we did yesterday, and defining a package is definitely more advanced than what we did yesterday. And trying to make sure that those of you that are already rather familiar with programming don't get too bored. And I want to show you some of the cool features that Julia has in this respect. So if you're a beginning programmer, don't worry if the second half of the lecture is a bit more complicated for you. And we will continue that on Monday's tutorial next week. And we will create something on Monday that corresponds to what you're supposed to hand in for your projects. Except this Monday, we'll do it together. For the other projects, you'll be a bit more on your own. So let's start it. How to define a type. The keyword to define a type is struct. Okay, now, if you're unfamiliar with programming, let's give an example first. Let's say you have a function and you're always passing similar arguments to a function. For example, let's say we want to work with the geometry, we have some points and we want to translate a point. And then we have a function translate, kind of move a point. And of course the input is the point x, y, or the x and the y coordinates of the point. We're going to translate it. So then we have some direction dx, dy. And now we have a function with four arguments, and in 3D it would be six arguments, and that would be rather inconvenient. And therefore what we want to do, we want to introduce a type point in that respect. And then instead of writing x and y, we just say there's one point p and one distance d, and this point then encapsulates both the x and y coordinates in the same way as a complex number has two components. Okay, so the keyword to introduce a type in Julia is called struct. And I'm going to call that point the type int point. In Julia, it's customary that functions begin with a lowercase letter and types begin with an uppercase letter. It's just a convention, but if you follow it, it makes it easier for others to understand your code. So int point, that's a point that holds integers, and there's a one, the type has one component x, which is of type int, and also a field y of type int. So this annotation with a double colon specifies that x has a particular type. It is possible to define a type without specifying the type like that. And this is something how you would do it in Mathematica or in Python. But if you do specify a type, then this allows Julia to generate code that is much more efficient. So whenever you define a data type, the rule is you should be as specific as possible in defining the types for your elements. And so this is our point, and then we can create a point by calling the constructor, for example, 1, 2, but it's a point that the x coordinate 1 and the y coordinate 2. And let's do that. Let's call this point P, assign it to P. And then of course we can look at the type of P. Rather unsurprisingly, it will be of type int point. And then we use the usual syntax p.x to get the x coordinate and p.y to get the y coordinate of that point. Okay. If you're following along in your Julia notebook, did you all create a point, the type, and call the constructor? Unfortunately, I can't really see your faces from at home because the camera is zoomed too far out. So Dustin, you have to tell me if there's anything going wrong.
It's pretty much okay. I saw a number of thumbs up.
Okay, very good, very good. Sorry, what did you say?
I think you're good.
Okay, very good. Now what we just did is we defined a point that holds just integer coordinates, which is pretty useless. And I called it in point because I'm going to define another point type. Let's create another point type that can hold floating point coordinates. Struct float point, x is a floating point, and y is a floating point coordinate. It's very similar to above, and then have another point, let's call it q, float point 1, 2. And you see, although I called the constructor float point with integers, it's been converted to floating point numbers because a float point can also only hold elements of a floating point type. And then of course, q.x and q.y will be floating point numbers. And it is quite inconvenient if there is a more generic mechanism for that, if you don't have to specify what type the points have, but rather define a generic point type. So let me do that. So generic types are something that doesn't quite exist in Python or Mathematica. In C++, it would be called a template. I don't know what it would be called in Rust. So let's define a type point. And then in curly braces, this need to be curly braces. We have t here, and then we write x, t, y, t, and. And this is now a point where both the x and y coordinates of the point have some type t, but t is unspecified. So this point is something like a weird function, a function that creates a type, not a value. And the function takes as argument some type t. And then I can write point of int 1, 2. And then I create something that is exactly to the int point we have earlier, kind of a point of integers. And I can write point. I'll write in a second. Point of float 1, 2, and then I get a float point. So this way of defining a data type allows you to define a generic data type where the actual element type is not specified. So in principle, you define infinitely many point types here. Now I'd like to get a show of hands. Who of you is familiar with generic programming from some other language, say Rust, C++, Fortran, and so on? That's okay. A quarter of the people, maybe, or something? Okay. Yeah. Okay. I want to strike a balance here between not going into too much detail, because that's the beginning of the course and this is an abstract concept, but also trying not to be too confusing here. So let's write a function that adds two points together. That doesn't make sense, right? We rather want to add a function that adds vectors. So let's write a function, we call it add, and this function accepts two arguments, p, which is some point, and q, which is a point. Oh, sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. A point, now I'll go leave it like that. That is maybe better. And then the result of adding two points is, first, the new x-coordinate of the point is the x-coordinate of p plus the x-coordinate of q. And then the y-coordinate is q.x, p.y, plus q.y. And then we return a new point that uses these new coordinates x and y. I'll give you time to type that in. Maybe I should have called them P1 and P2 to be less confusing. I'm just going to change that just to make you freak out if you want to type exactly what I have. And then let's define a type with coordinates 1, 2, and another point with coordinate -1 and 2. And then let's add them. And the result is, of course, 0.04. Yesterday, there was a question about object-oriented programming. And in object-oriented programming, you have a type hierarchy. That is, some types are subtypes of other types. As a bad example, for example, natural numbers are the subtypes of integers, or integers are the subtypes of rational numbers, and so on. And in Julia, you can ask what the supertype of a particular type is. For example, the supertype of int is signed, the set of type integers, or the supertype of point int, the integer points that we just defined, is any. Yeah, no, that was not very useful. Forget I said that. What I was trying to say is that if you write point without anything, that corresponds to writing point any implicitly. No, it doesn't. Oh, sorry. I argued myself into a corner here. What I'm trying to get at here is that there's a point int, which is an integer point, and here we write only point without any type argument. And what that means for this function, that this function will accept any point. It doesn't matter what the element type is. We can pass an integer point or a floating point or a point holding strings or whatever you put in there. I mean, a point holding strings doesn't make sense because we couldn't add them, but Julia would allow that. Okay, sorry, my user interface is frozen again. I need to wait here for a bit. Okay, now, okay, let me ask another question. Who of you, show of hands, please, is familiar with defining types, something like classes in Python? That's a few more, okay, but still not everybody. So the basic idea of why one introduces a new type is that it simplifies the code. If you allow me to scroll up to the type point here, if I have this add function, I want to add points. Currently, I'm passing two arguments, one point or another point. If I didn't have that type defined, then I would have to pass in p1x, the x coordinate of the point, p1y, the y coordinate of the point, p2x, p2y, and they would have many more arguments to that function. And that would make the code very tedious to write, would also make it easier to make an error. So if you define your own type, that makes the code easier to read, easier to write, it reduces the number of errors, but obviously the code that you write also becomes a bit longer because you actually need to define the point, and here you need to write this add function, which you didn't need to do if you're just adding the coordinates of the point, because obviously the code. Julia already knows how to add integers. Okay. Now I want to show you something else, which is called overloading, function overloading. And when you write 2 + 3 in Julia, then you might think that this operator plus is something special. It's not. It actually is just a function with a really weird name, and the weird name consists of the plus symbol. So you can also write plus of 2, 3. Sorry, user interface is frozen. And the result is exactly the same. So the same holds true if you multiply numbers and so on. So here we defined a function add, and then we called it add p1, p2. It would be much nicer if we could just write p1 plus p2 instead. So we can actually do that. We can define an add function where we just use the plus symbol here. So let me copy that code. And the syntax to do that is in this way. So the function name is plus, and we add the base dot in front of it. Base is a module that is automatically used. All the basic stuff in Julia is actually defined in the module called base. And that means we are adding a new method to the plus operator, which is already defined in the base function. Sorry, something happened here. And now, what? Sorry, did I forget the colon here? Yes, I did. And now we can indeed write p1 plus p2 because there is now this additional method for the plus function that we defined that allows us to add points. So built in, Julia, of course, knows how to add integers and knows how to add floating point numbers and arrays and so on. And now we added this method to the plus function where we can now also add points.
So what if you do something that conflicts with the original definition? If you just said, oh, I have integers, I'm going to say this plus subtracts the numbers.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I'll try it out and later I'll restart my kernel. So this way of defining a function where you don't write the function keyword, you write it on a single line and just use an equal sign here, that's just a shortcut for defining a function. So this is the same way of defining a function. So now I'm defining a new method for the plus function where x and y are of type int, and I define it to be subtracting x and y. So if I do that, something horribly will go wrong. I hope it doesn't delete my file. Because the notebook runs in Julia. Kernel restarting. Okay, so it actually, there was no error message doing that definition. It actually did what I asked it to do. But of course, all the internal things, for example, creating the next output in the notebook and so on, all that happens in Julia. And of course, all of that went horribly wrong because not being able to add something. So hope you didn't type that. And I'm going to actually delete that here so that you're not confused when that happens. But yes, you can do that. You can operate things.
Sorry, Eric, I'm not sure I fully understand the notation of base dot colon plus. So,
okay. Yes. So what we really want to do is define a function with the name plus. But plus is really a special symbol. So as to not confuse the interpreter, I think when you define it, you have to add a colon in front of it to define it. Now, if I did this, I would define a new plus function that's independent of the existing plus function in base that already exists. Because I don't know, I'm currently defining things in the global namespace. That's probably a module called main instead of base. Technical details do not really matter. And thus, if you write base dot in front of it, you're actually adding a new method to the function in base. The upshot is whenever you overload an operator plus minus divides, you have to use the base dot colon in front of it. That is just, you might as well accept it as a fact that this is how you add a new method to the plus function.
Okay.
Oh, I need to run all the code in my module. Sorry, in my kernel here. from my kernel we started, so the definition of the points type actually wasn't available. So we need to wait until everything has run again.
I know, why did he restart the kernel?
Can you give kernel?
He has to run everything again. I think he has to run.
Okay, we are back. We are back.
Was it?
Did you have a question? Okay, you might be familiar with that from Mathematica, but whenever you type something and make a change further up and so on, get confused with the order in which fields have been evaluated, then it's a good idea to restart kernel and run all cells. And then you make sure that all the things that what happened now?
Yeah.
I clicked something that all the definitions are consistent and the notebook becomes reproducible. Okay. How are we doing this defining functions and defining types and so on? Do you have a fairly solid grasp on that? Should we do another example or should we go on to something more complicated in rewriting Julia packages? Dustin, can you read the room on that? Hassan, also speak up, please.
Okay, kind of moving on. Yeah.
Actually, quick question first. How do you change the value of like one of these structures? Like if I say p dot x equals 5, it won't let me change.
Aha, very good. Yes. So Julia knows about mutable and immutable structures. And by default, structures are immutable. That is, you cannot modify them. In many cases, that's exactly what you need. And these structures can internally be represented in a more efficient way. But if you want to do something like object-oriented programming or you want to modify something, you need to do something else. So let's talk about mutable structs. And yeah, you define them just like this. Let's call it endpoint of t, x, t, y, t, end. Now, I'm using a new name because I don't want any conflict with the point type that I introduced earlier. And now I have a mutable struct here. And then if I constrained, for example, point p equals m point of 2, 3. And then I output p, it has the values 2 to 3. I can write p dot x and I can write p dot x equals 14. And then if I write p again, that you see it has changed. And internally, the struct point that we defined earlier, the immutable one, the efficient one, is essentially stored in two CPU registers, super efficient, whereas this struct endpoint is more something like a Python object. It's allocated on the heap, it's garbage collected. Whenever you modify it, whenever you pass the point to routine, instead of passing the values of the point, instead it has to pass a pointer to the actual endpoint object that has been created. And it makes the code a bit slower. But I mean, if you need to modify something, then obviously this is the way to go. I'm just trying to explain why default in Julia is immutable structs. Okay. Further questions? Okay, and then I want to make a brief excursion onto dual numbers. And then I want to begin to write a package, a Julia package for dual numbers. You might have heard about complex numbers. Well, I assume you do. Complex numbers are written as A plus IB. where A and B are real numbers. And this essentially makes complex numbers something like a two vector, a vector of two real numbers. And from this two vector of real numbers, A and B, and just from this definition, we know how to add complex numbers and multiply by a real number, because it's a vector space and we know how to add vectors and how to scale vectors. No, we don't know how to multiply complex numbers yet, but next we define A squared, we define I squared to be minus one. And now if we multiply complex numbers, right? If we have A plus IB times C plus ID, then the result would be AC plus, sorry, let's add a multiplication sign here. AC plus IBC plus I, please help me if I make a mistake, AD plus I squared BD. And if we set I squared to minus one, then we know this is equal to minus BD, where I move the term front into the front, and we can add parentheses here. And we know this is another complex number. So just by defining I squared to be minus one, we can multiply complex numbers and then we also know how to divide them, but because division is just the inverse of multiplication. And we haven't proved yet when division is possible, whether it's uniquely defined or whether it exists so that there are numbers you cannot divide by these numbers because they're zero and so on, we just leave that out. And this way of defining complex numbers is called an algebraic definition. Because we are just defining rules for manipulating complex numbers. We say we can add them multiplying, we say what I squared is, then we know how to multiply them. And this doesn't tell us anything about the properties of complex numbers. Of course, historically, complex numbers were introduced very differently. You want to have a quadratic polynomials, you want to make sure that they have a solution at all times. So you come to imaginary numbers and so on and so on. Fundamental theorem of algebra. This algebraic definition starts at the other end. You just make up some rules and then you come up with something and then you look at these complex numbers, say, oh, we can multiply them, oh, we can divide them. You look at division, say, oh, that's really cool. Division always works. Complex numbers form a field. And then you look at polynomials of complex numbers and then you discover the fundamental theorem of algebra. And then you say, yeah, complex numbers, we want to keep them. They're quite nice. But here we made this choice, I squared. We say I squared is minus one. And that is a rather arbitrary choice. What happens if we make a different choice here? For example, if we say, well, I squared, maybe it's one, or maybe it should be zero. So complex numbers, I don't know when they were invented. I don't know, there's a long history of that, of course. Anyway, dual numbers were invented or discovered in the 1850s or 1870s by, I don't know, Cayley, Hamilton, Grassmann. You could probably look it up on Wikipedia. I did, but then I forgot. I'm sorry. Anyway, they've been around for about 150 numbers. So dual numbers, they're very similar. You write them as A plus epsilon. I write backslash epsilon, hit the tab key. It does not work. No. Oh, so annoying. Sorry. Okay. It works in a regular cell. A plus epsilon B. And then, of course, we can add dual numbers and we can multiply by real numbers. And then we define, well, as the number epsilon indicates, we define epsilon squared to be zero. And you might have heard of that, right? There's a thing called epsilon. Epsilon is not zero, but if you square it, it is zero. That this probably looks like something that you heard of before. And then we multiply them. Then, of course, it's a bit simpler than for complex numbers. C plus, man, I wish it would be easier to type epsilon, equals AC plus epsilon BC plus AD. I really hope you're correcting me. And of course, the epsilon squared term vanishes. And now, sorry, interface frozen again. I wonder why that happens. Maybe it's the autosave. Dustin, can you figure out how to disable autosave?
Try.
Okay. Now we can multiply dual numbers and you can divide dual numbers. But I haven't proven yet whether in under what circumstances division would work and so on. And it turns out dual numbers are not actually a field. There are numbers that are not zero and you cannot divide by them. That's slightly inconvenient. Anyway, dual numbers are kind of like the cousin of complex numbers because they have very similar rules. But let's add a new line here that makes that easier to understand here. Doesn't work. Add the new line here. Sorry, I'm just trying to improve the formatting here. Oh man, let's add just these. Man, a blackboard is easier. What is wrong now? Anyway, the line spacing is off. Anyway, you can see what I write here. Dual numbers are like the cousin of complex number. They are slightly easier because the multiplication is easier because you don't have this additional epsilon square term. And why I'm talking about dual numbers, they're actually pretty cool. You might have heard of a new fad in technical computing called artificial intelligence or machine learning or neural networks. And when it comes to neural networks, then one important, very expensive operation is called training the network, when the network needs to learn something. A neural network depends on many parameters, but you need to fine-tune the parameters so that a function that the network defines has the result that you want it to have. And when you train the network, then you need to calculate how the result of the neural network depends on the parameters. Technically, that's the derivative of the loss function or the cost function with respect to each of these parameters. And there's one famous algorithm called backtracking, but these days many other algorithms are used as well. And one of the efficient algorithms actually uses dual numbers because you can use dual numbers to calculate derivatives. And that is, I don't want to go into detail here because I want to teach you Julia, not dual numbers, but there's a nice Wikipedia page about dual numbers where that might also be explained. So let's just.
Dual numbers look sort of like something you'd use for like first order approximation or something like that.
Yes, perturbation theory, exactly. So it's kind of an algebraic definition of perturbation theory. When I came across perturbation theory in physics courses, the teacher said, well, there's a value epsilon. Epsilon is a real number that is positive and it's smaller than any other real number and it squares to zero. This, of course, is complete numbers because epsilon is not a real number. If this was a real number, then the whole thing would be a real number. So epsilon is not a real number, but it has this weird property that it squares to zero. And did you exactly get perturbation theory? And if you evaluate a polynomial, let's write x plus epsilon to the nth power, and you just multiply it out, then of course you get x to the nth plus epsilon times, and the next term is n times x to the n minus 1. And all the other terms vanish because they would have higher powers of epsilon. And if you look at this thing, sorry. Does this look right? Yes. Then this looks very much like a derivative. So x to the n is the original function plus epsilon times n times x to the n minus 1 actually happens to be the derivative of x to the n. And now dual numbers are something that are linear. Well, a derivative is a linear operator and it has this weird property, and it turns out you can very easily use them to calculate derivatives or do perturbation theory. It's a nice algebraic way. And without going into more detail, I want to now write a Julia package that implements dual numbers. Julia already has real numbers and complex numbers. And I want to, just as an example package, implement dual numbers. Of course, if you don't like dual numbers, you could implement diagonal quaternions, octonions or something, but it's a bit more work. So I think we should define a dual number type. Of course, in real life, you wouldn't do that because there are probably 2,500 Julia packages already available on GitHub that implement dual numbers because they're such a convenient feature and because machine learning is so important and taking derivatives. But I think it would be a good exercise for us to implement dual numbers and to see how to do that. So in the rest of the lecture, we are going to define a type for dual numbers and we are going to define some operations for dual numbers. But we're not going to do that in a notebook here. Rather, we're going to define a Julia package so that later on in a different notebook or in a different package, you can just say using dual numbers and then use these dual numbers. Okay. Does that make sense to you? Does the plan sound good? Do you understand how dual numbers work?
I cannot type epsilon.
Okay, yes. If you have a regular input field, but you can write a Julia expression, then you can write backslash epsilon. And if you hit the tab key, then the browser converts it to the epsilon symbol. But what I did up here, I went into markdown mode, and apparently it doesn't work into markdown mode. Sorry for that. Okay. Let's define a Julia package. One way to generate a skeleton, kind of the basic structure for a Julia package, is to go into package manager mode. So, sorry, let me add a new title for the lecture here. And write generate and then the package name, dual numbers. And Julia, it's customary that packages start with an uppercase name and that they should be plural, right? You don't call it dual number, but rather dual numbers because the package is about numbers. And if you hit shift return, it generates the package. And to see the package, I'm going to open a terminal. So if you all type generate dual numbers, so I'm going to file, where is this? Do I need to click this icon here?
Yeah, I think so. Probably to bring up the file browser again.
Okay, file.
Relauncher, yeah.
Maybe I just want an editor. I think I just want an editor.
Do you want to edit it in a terminal or in the Jupyter?
I'll try the editor and then we'll see what works. Okay, so this is now the file browser and there should be a new package dual numbers that generated. I don't see it. Where would it be?
In a directory?
Yeah, yeah. So in that file browser, first come the directories and then the files. So I needed to scroll up here. There's a desktop document dual nu, that's dual numbers. And I click on this one. And there's a source folder in here. So I double click on this one. And okay, maybe I should make it a bit wider to actually see the file names. And then I want to edit this file here. Okay, actually, Dustin, can you read the room? Do people want to use Nano or do they want to use the built-in editor?
I guess you like Nano.
Pardon?
I guess you like Nano if you use Nano.
I can survive in Nano. I don't know.
Okay, very good. New launcher terminal, I'm going to use Nano. You can also use the other editor. I'm going to open a terminal here. So if I type ls, you see all my files here. There are a lot. And then cd, dual numbers. And if I type ls again, you see two things have been generated, project.toml. Toml is something like YAML, like a JSON file. It's kind of a general project description. And source is another subdirectory where all the package files live. Let's just look at the project file here. I'm using the cat command. It's just as the name of the package is dual numbers. The package has a UUID. This will be different for your package than for mine, because although your package might also be called dual numbers, they're of course different packages. So internally, they can be differentiated by this unique ID. The author of my packages is Eric Schnetter, obviously, and it has this initial version number 010. Okay. I'm going to cd into the source directory. And if I type ls again, then you see the source file dual numbers that defines the package. And we're going to edit this file. I'm going to wait until you're here. Maybe you wanted to look at your own dual numbers, have to start a terminal, and so on. Did you all manage to go there? Did you manage to generate the package and open Nano for the package? Dustin, can I bother you to walk between the aisles and see who is stuck?
It's got a good number of nods and thumbs up.
Okay, very good. I'm going to hit return.
Nano editors, good stuff.
can I ask a quick question?
Please do.
That's Hassan. Where is it reading our email? Just out of curiosity, in the project file.
Sorry, where is what's the file?
In the project file, we are seeing our email, right? And I'm not sure how it's getting access to that information.
I think it gets it from Git. When we configure Git, then you gave it the email address. And I think that is where Julia would use that email address. And it needs that email address later on if you submit a package and create a GitHub repository, which is totally something you're going to do later on if there's enough time.
Thank you.
Okay, so this is the basic definition of the Julia module. There's not much going on here. There's this this function greet, which I don't like. So I'm going to delete it because don't need it. Instead, you're going to define this the type for dual numbers in a very similar manner to the point type. So we call it struct. And I'm just going to call it dual. Right? I mean, complex numbers, the type is not complex number, the type is just called complex. So here's just the type dual. And there is, well, for complex numbers, you say it's a real part and the imaginary part. For dual numbers, you call it the real part or the dual part. Sometimes people call it the primal part or the dual part, because primal is the dual to dual. I don't really like that, so I call it real. So there's the real part of type T and the dual part of type T. And since this is a package by default, Everything you define in a package is private to the package and is not visible to the outside. So we're going to have to export that name so that you can see it on the outside when you use that package. So it's called, let's export that name dual. And since I want to teach you software engineering, I'm also going to talk about documentation. We should also write a bit of a documentation for dual numbers. Julia has a thing called docstrings. Python does the very same, where you can add a string in front of the type definition to define something. To define the, sorry, to document it. And the documentation, you write it in between triple strings. And I'm not going to write a long documentation here, just write something. And then I'm going to write out the file. And that is the beginning of our dual number type. It is just a module where we have the type definition for dual numbers, and where we export dual, and where we have this doc string, the triple quotes, then the documentation, another triple quotes, and these things have to be right in front of the struct. Adding an empty line here for clarity. Okay, I'm going to wait another minute in case you want to type that. And of course, you're typing this currently in an editor. So if you make any kind of typo, nobody will complain. You'll get the error messages later on when we're going to use that module from Julia.
Just to confirm, these are curly braces around the T because this is.
Thank you. They are curly braces. So Julia uses the round parentheses if you want to define a function, call a function or define a tuple. Then there are the square brackets, which are used for arrays, to define arrays and to index arrays. And there are the curly braces. And in Julia, they are used for types, for these kind of type arguments. Okay, show of hands, who is done with that? Let's try to use that module from Julia and see what happens. You're all done? Okay. Okay. I am trying to show both things at the same time, both the terminal and our Julia notebook. So I'm going to move the terminal. And yeah, here, now it's on the left, shaded blue. I let go. And now we see both things here. I'm scrolling on the right. And before we use it, I am going to add another package. Package manager mode, add, revise. There is a revise package in Julia. And quite frankly, revise should be built into Julia, but it isn't. Sorry, it'll finish typing soon. And what this package does, if you use another package and then make a change to that other package, it will automatically reload the other package. And that means in the future, after we use the dual numbers package, we're going to make more changes here to the package. And whatever we change will automatically be available from Julia. It's very convenient, which is why I add the package. You need to do that once. And now I'm using the revise package. And that using revise is a convenient thing to do in all your notebooks. As usual, this now takes a few minutes. Okay. Now, what we did so far for this part of the lecture, we defined a Julia package, a Julia module called dual numbers. This is inconvenient. Oh, I think the editor is all messed up. because this dual numbers here is not supposed to be part of the Julia code. And this down here as well looks all really weird.
Yeah.
Okay, I pressed Control L on the left and then the screen is not as messed up anymore. The bottom here still looks funny, but I don't care about that. At least the top looks no good. And now we are going to say using dual numbers. And yes. And then we should see the definition of that type dual. And then we can use the type dual the same way we can use the point type earlier. So in terms of types, there's nothing new here. The only new thing here is dealing with packages and modules and so on. Okay, in the meantime, we have a bit of more progress. This is really annoying. Why is this so slow? Dustin, can you keep a mental mode? Next time we don't let people use symmetry. Next time we go to GCP and everybody gets their own system there. Do you think that would be faster?
We have one issue where it doesn't seem to recognize this symbol for packages, this right bracket. Was there something that needed to be run in order to understand this? It says unexpected bracket.
Okay.
Even the generate.
Are you in the Julia notebook?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a closing bracket. It's not an opening bracket. It's a really weird thing to type as the first character.
Yeah. It looks okay.
Okay. And another thing is you cannot be in markdown mode. You have to be in the regular mode.
That's true. So it does say it's in code.
Can you try maybe not having the comment line there?
That's the only thing that's different.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that's complaining something else. Oh, it says already exists. Okay, that's okay. So that's good. So let's see, try one, try this other one, but without that. It looks as though it's unhappy if you have the like closing bracket and you also have a comment on the same notebook cell. It seems to be. Oh yeah, comments are Julia syntax, but this is not Julia code. This is package manager code. So you cannot have any comments. I mean, it would be nice if you could have comments, but.
Okay.
Is it working now?
Is anybody else finding the notebook interface slow, or is this an error? Strange thing, it's a little bit slow, faster than Eric's.
Today for me is good, but yesterday for me it was super slow.
I wonder if it's Eric.
It might be because he has Zoom open too, and that takes a lot of
I think it's running a cluster.
I mean, you have two compute nodes. Each of them has 40 cores, and these were not cheap. They are kind of high-end systems. So they were a high-end system 5 years ago. But still, there is no excuse for that being slow.
Yeah, I think maybe you didn't say that.
Yeah,
I said it was 1.4.
Okay.
We're all working in our home directory, so we're hitting that home file server pretty hard.
Oh, okay. Well, the new hardware is on site. I hope it will be installed soon.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so after typing using revise, I want you to type using dual. See whether it works, whether it finds that package. It doesn't. Oh, man. Okay.
I just followed their instructions.
Oh, is it because it's called dual numbers?
Are you kidding me? Not found. Yeah, no, we need to.
We have to import.
No. Don't follow that. Don't follow that instructions.
Okay.
You need to type this one, activate dual numbers. this activates the package. And it kind of means it looks in the local directory and then it knows about the package, because Julia doesn't want to go look for packages just anywhere in your directory tree. Now there should be a type dual. Let's try it. Let's define a dual number.
What was the export about then? You said export dual.
Yes.
What if you
this
said export
type dual else? That we define here, that struct.
Oh,
mean dual is by default not exported, but because we export it, now using dual numbers, now this thing dual exists. Actually, let's look at the help text for dual. If you write question mark and dual, then you get help about something. And then dual, a dual number, which is the help text we wrote here. It's not helpful because I was a bit lazy when I wrote the help text, but we get help text for it. And let's define a dual number, for example, 1, 2. And it works. Let's define another dual number, 2, 3. And when we add them, what will happen if I add the dual numbers? Could you venture, I guess?
I have a problem, Eric.
Yes.
Eric?
Yes, Hassan?
So when I'm doing activate dual numbers, it is activating the project at the that directory, but then I'm doing using dual numbers again after that. It cannot find the package.
Okay. So I was assuming that this Julia Notebooks runs in your home directory, and that you create this package also in the home directory. We created that package earlier when we typed the generate here.
Okay.
If you use different directories, it would not be finding it.
It is in a, it's, yeah, it is not in a, in home, it's in different directory.
Okay. So you should be able to add the path name here, for example, like that.
Mm-hmm.
And just tap activate.
So in activate, it is working actually, right? It is finding the directory, activating project at something. But when I'm doing using dual numbers after that,
okay.
Not finding.
What's the name of your project?
So it's dual numbers. Exactly.
Module is also called dual numbers?
Yes.
And path name that is output here, that's the correct path name for you?
Yes, it is in PSI course dual numbers. Yes.
Okay.
Exactly what I'm seeing.
Okay. Then you can do something else. Everybody else, please look away at the moment. Instead of activate, you can use semicolon that goes into shell mode, and then you type a CD command.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is for you. And maybe that works. And then after that, you need to activate dot. Activate dot, the current directory. Is that working for you? Okay. The others, can you try to add two dual numbers in the meantime and see what happens? Hassan, how is it going? Is it working?
Okay. So maybe if I can use, I mean, I'm going to move the entire thing to somewhere else. Maybe.
I tried to see entering all the did you run something in the past?
Okay.
Okay, that's okay.
Okay. Hassan, did you try the things that I suggested?
It was not going through. I think I was writing something wrong, but what I'm doing now, I'm trying to move everything back to the home directory for now so I could follow up. And later on I can okay.
Very good. Let's go on in the meantime.
Thank you. Yes, sure.
If you add dual numbers, then of course the error message is a method error because we didn't define addition for dual numbers. So of course, this is exactly what we're going to do in our next step. So we're going back to the editor.
It looks like the first line has disappeared. Oh, and also there's a line above that. I thought that's the says, you know, logical. Yeah.
Yeah, let's try using.
Okay, this is not working out. I'm going to rearrange my screen so that the terminal is on the top. And a Julia notebook at the bottom. Maybe that works better.
And where's this message located?
Okay, great.
Is that directly? No, that's just the path. So click on the folder. Okay. And see, let's go.
Oh, wow.
So that's dual numbers. Yeah. Here we have an issue.
Interesting thing is going on here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am having trouble with the editor here with scrolling and so on. Sorry.
What do we got? Syntax cannot juxtapose string literal.
Yeah.
Okay, I can see it. I think he wants for the string, I think he wants three of those double quotes, and I think
four?
You have four, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
One. Oh, it looks like it's messed up on the screen side.
Yeah, I think it doesn't like it.
Yeah. Maybe.
Okay.
So here you have to actually get entered just to confirm this. Maybe three.
Oh, I think now it likes it. Okay.
Cool. Okay. Yeah, that looks good.
That was all of you. Huh.
Thank you.
Okay. Did you manage to create the dual number in the notebook? Hmm? Show of hands, who was able to use the package from the Julia notebook and create a dual number? Hmm? Okay, Dustin, are people still stuck?
I think people are pretty good. Yeah, I think we're okay.
Okay, so after. If you can create dual numbers, the next step would be to add a function that allows you to add two dual numbers, which is exactly equivalent to overloading the plus operator for the point earlier. So I'm writing it here on a single line. You can also use the function keyword if you want to. So it's base dot colon plus x and y need to be dual numbers. And then we create a new dual numbers. And the real part the sum of the two real parts, and the dual part is the sum of the two dual parts. And then you have to save it to disk. And then after doing that, the addition should work, because revise automatically reloads the module. See whether that works. It does work for me. Okay, while we wait, Hassan, did you manage to create and use the module for dual numbers?
Yes, I did, but this the last part is not working for me, that's it. Let me double check. Maybe I have a typo in the.
What is that? It's not working.
Did you run something other than revise after editing the file?
Yeah.
No, you don't need to do anything. The revise works automatically.
Okay.
After editing the file, all you need to do is save the file.
And then just run it.
And then just run the add command again.
Did it? Yeah, it's working now.
You
I had a typo.
Plus function, of course.
Yeah, I did that too. And for my previous problem, I noticed it was a just very silly typo in my command. Sorry.
Oh, man. Okay. Now, I highly recommend pair programming. Pair programming means that you find a colleague, a buddy, and you sit next to each other and you work on a single laptop, on a single screen. And then all typos, so all oversights like that are caught much more easily. That really makes it much easier to follow along. Okay, just because we can, let's also define subtraction. So I'm currently editing in the terminal. And it's really boring. All the pluses get replaced by minuses. So we subtract the real parts and we subtract the dual parts from each other. We write out the file and then we can test it here. X minus Y works now. Of course, we're going to have to define a few other things. It's actually quite tedious. We need to define how to calculate the negative of a dual number, the conjugate, and we need to define multiplication and division for dual numbers. But before doing that, I want to show something else. What we did here in the Julia notebook is we wrote the code in the terminal, and then we tested the code here in Julia. We create a dual number. We add them, we check whether it's correct, we subtract them, we check whether it's correct. And this testing, this manual testing, has one disadvantage. Then it doesn't happen automatically. Rather, what you want to do is define a few tests that run automatically whenever you change the code. And before moving on to that, I want to make sure that everybody's on the same page. So I'm going to wait a bit until everybody's ready. Okay. Is everybody ready? Did you all manage to add dual numbers and maybe subtract them? Are you ready for something else? Okay. To add a test case, what we need to do, we need to get out of the editor, back in the terminal. That's Control X. We are in the source directory. If you type ls, you see dual numbers. We go up one directory. There we see the project, DOML, and the source. And we need to create a new directory here. And the command for that is mkdir. And the directory needs to have the name test. And after creating it, we're going to go into that directory. So you need to make sure you're in the dual numbers directory, not in the source directory. You need to go up one directory. The dual numbers directory then looks like that. There's project, DOML, and source. Then you create a new directory and the name needs to be test, exactly like that. And then you cd into the test directory. Did you all do that? Okay. And then we're going to create a new file with Nano, and the new file is called runtests.jl. Now this needs to be called test, and this is run tests. Test, no S, tests with an S, run tests, no space or something, and .jl because it's a Julia file. And this is now a Julia script. And this Julia script can be run automatically to test the code that you just have written. So here we're going to say, using dual numbers. And we're also going to use another package called test. And then we just write the code that we want to use to test the package. So x equals dual 1, 2, y equals dual 2, 3. And then we can, for example, write z equals x plus y, and then we can write a test, and tests are written using the at test macro, test z equals dual 3, 5. So what we did, we created a new file that is called runtests.jl. That file needs to live in a subdirectory called test. And the code that we want to use to test the package, we write it in this script. And the script looks very similar to the code that we wrote in the Julia notebook earlier. There is the using dual numbers, then we create some dual numbers, and then we do some operations. And we, at test, we can check whether a condition holds or not. And later on, we can run Julia, ask Julia to perform these tests, and then it will test us whether things work or not. So for example, z must be equal to the dual number 3, 5. Because we're adding x and y. And once you're done writing the file, don't forget to write the file to disk with Control O. Show of hands, who is ready? Who did that? Okay. 2/3 are still working, so let's wait another minute or two. Now, the idea to have tests for a package that can be run automatically is a hugely important concept in software engineering, because that means later on you or someone else can make changes to the package. And if any bug is accidentally introduced, these bugs can be caused by running these tests. It's also, if you wrote a package that for some reason works nicely on Symmetry and doesn't work on your laptop for some weird reason, you can automatically run the tests there and catch these bugs. Now for dual numbers, that package is so simple. I don't expect there to be any bugs. I expect you all to be able to implement it bug-free after the tests are running. But for a large package, this is a hugely important concept. And I really want to introduce that in this introduction here. Okay, are you ready to see how to run these tests automatically?
Can you explain the last line, add test z equal to dual?
Add test is a macro that's provided by this test package here. And what it does, it evaluates this expression. And if it's true, all is fine, silence. And if it's not true, it's going to report an error later on. It's going to test whether this is correct. And all the tests you write will use this add test macro. So in the end, you can have 100 different add tests here. You're going to test addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, and so on and so forth. And yes, it's very tedious to do so, to write these tests. But if you have a large package, and at some point you'll see that you get into a mode where it's difficult to make changes without breaking anything, then taking an hour to write a few tests can be very relieving, because it kind of guarantees that the code is correct. Okay, another show of hands, please. Who has finished writing these test cases? Okay, then let's go back to the Julia notebook. Before we can run the test, we're using this package add test here. So we're going to need to add it to our project. Again, package manager mode, add test. That should happen very quickly because test is actually a built-in package. So in package manager mode, we add test. And to run the tests, it's also done by the package manager. It's just test. It's testing dual numbers, it's loading a few packages, and it passed all tests. Well, my package didn't have any errors. Okay, can you run this test command for your package? Is it working? Of hands, who has an error in their package?
I have an error.
Okay. Justin, can you go and have a look?
Yes, he typed in add test. Yeah.
I don't think it is. think it's fun.
My error appeared. It's working. I just don't know how to add numbers. I think 1 + 2, 1 + 1 = 3. Okay.
Oh, so the test case was fun. Yeah, that can happen. That, of course, is unfortunate. So, what we're going to do on Monday's tutorial, which concludes this introduction to Julia, is a few things. First, we're going to take this package and we are going to create a GitHub repository for it. And we're going to push it to GitHub and going to add a bit of a README to it. We're also going to flesh out the package that we have, not just adding dual numbers, but also multiplying and dividing dual numbers. And we're going to extend the test cases so that the test cases test more than just addition. And as a bonus, I can also show you, or maybe you can do that on your own, there are instructions online how to make a GitHub run these test cases automatically. So every time you commit a change and you push it to GitHub, GitHub will run all the test cases to your package, and then you can get a nice badge, kind of a green button on your GitHub page that says all the tests succeed, or you're getting a red button if some of the tests fail. And quite frankly, if I look at someone else's project and want to see whether that's a good project, whether it makes sense to use that code, I'm looking for that. If there are no test cases, I know the person is rather inexperienced and there's probably a lot of problems with the code. And if there's this green button and it says that this code has 100 tests, that's a very good first impression that I have from some code. So if you are interested in computational science, and if you later on write job applications as a grad student or postdoc or professor, or even if you want to work for some company, people might look at your GitHub profile and they might look at the code. And if they see test cases there and if they see that you know how to use GitHub, this will be a very good first impression that they get for you. Okay, I don't want to continue any further. We have just 3 minutes left. So I want to open it up for questions or suggestions or complaints. Okay, is everything working for you as expected?
I have a question. When we define or override functions, can we use the new definition in another function's definitions? Like defining first and using it in another definition?
Yes. Let me just open up the other file here again. Yes, you can do that. Of course, it's going to be recursive in a way. Of course, it has to end in some way. For example, when you subtract dual numbers, you can use addition, but then you need to define addition without subtraction. So let me just quickly define negation, how to negate a dual number, the negative of. This is just one argument. Right, this is just how to negate minus and then the dual number. We use these things. And then we can implement subtraction via addition and negation. Let's do that. X plus minus y. So here we defined how to negate, how to get the negative of a dual number. And now we define subtraction for dual numbers. Let's just take y. Negate it, it's going to call this function, and then add that, and that's going to call this function here. And you see how simple that definition is, because in all these things here, we have to take the dual number apart and say what to do with each of the elements and so on. On this high level definition, where one definition makes use of others is much simpler when you do that.
So when doing this, or is the order important? Like, because we need or
no. What Julia does, it first it reads the whole file and then knows everything about it. It is important that the types are defined before you use them. So the struct needs to be on the top because the type is already needed to define the function. But functions can be called in any order. That's fine.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for your interest. And I'll see you on Monday afternoon. I expect there's a tutorial at, Emily, remind me, what time? She's not here. Dustin, do you recall the time?
I believe it is 2 p.m. on Monday.
Okay. Sounds good. See you Monday, 2 p.m. Have a nice day.
Thank you.